Welcome to this telehealth technology podcast. I'm your host, Mike Patterson, and today I welcome the CEO and co-founder of Snap 40, Christopher McCann. So, Christopher, I want to just jump right in and have you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your company. So, welcome, Christopher.
Thank you. I appreciate you making the time. I'm the CEO and co-founder of a Scotland-based company, Snap 40, hence the wildly strong accent. My background, is, as we were just talking about, is a little bit different. I did a degree in computer science and then decided to go into medicine. And then, much to the disappointment of my family, decided to drop out of medical school to build this company. Really based on my experiences there, we try and keep patients, or the patients that most need, connected continuously to their healthcare team in order to allow earlier intervention, be they at home, be they in hospital. So we continuously monitor them from a little wearable device that we put on their upper arm. And then we take all of that information, present it to the home health agency, to the healthcare provider, to their physician, in order to try and determine when the warning signs of some chronic or acute deterioration are emerging. We also give the patient access to that information through their own tablet and allow the patient to report on things like how are they feeling, you know, what symptoms are they feeling, things that can't objectively be tracked by something like a device, you know, things like breathlessness and fatigue, but also give the patient, you know, things like reminders to take their medication, to track that, to give them reminders to collect their weight. And we make as much of that as possible seamless for the patient, ultimately with the goal of trying to keep them healthy, stop their decline, help the home health agency, help the healthcare provider get to the highest priority patient first.
So you were headed to medical school. You kind of put that on hold so you could build this company. Why did you decide on remote patient monitoring? How did you target remote patient monitoring and not another widget in healthcare?
So it's actually a bit of an evolution. Initially, and we still are to a certain extent, we wanted to try and automate in-hospital vital sign capture on general wards, because on general med-surg units, you know, typically vital signs are only collected every 4, 8, 12 hours. It takes an enormous amount of nursing time for the fact that it's only intermittent. And as a med student, I kept seeing patients who had deteriorated because we didn't pick up the problem early enough. So the initial, you know, purpose of this whole company was to solve that problem. And then we started taking this out to providers and hospitals who said, this is awesome for the hospital, but if you guys can continuously and passively monitor a patient at home, that's a whole next level of value for us, because we are trying to get patients. You know, hospitals, as you know, are becoming essentially tertiary care centers. You come in for surgery, you come in for some kind of outpatient appointment, and hopefully you go straight back home and don't come back in again. But the home is basically a black hole. Once they're there, you have no idea how the patient's doing. So if we can give, you know, health plans, healthcare providers, home health agencies, real-time awareness of status of the patient at home, it turns out that actually might be an even more valuable use of this than just putting it in hospitals. So it's been, you know, a continuing evolution to get to this point.
Well, I noticed from your website, you guys are a relatively new company. You've grown quickly and looks like you're well-funded. And so you've gotten some interest. How did you get so much interest so quickly?
So yes, we are 3 and a bit years old. We are now 30 people. We were 5 people 18 months ago. So we've grown really fast. We've raised about $10 million in equity funding from, we're venture capital backed, most of that from the United Kingdom. And I think we were very focused from the start on building out what we thought was a product that would solve a real world problem, you know, something that directly impacts patients' lives, but also strains health services at a time when they're already strained. So we built what we think is an excellent product. And then we just started talking extensively to healthcare providers about it. It turns out they thought it was a good idea, and we were able to get enough early traction at some really major healthcare providers. We were able to convince some of them to do early pilots and early clinical studies. That gave us really good data. And through all of that, we then managed to raise the investment that we did. But you know, a lot of the companies in our space are effectively academic spin-outs. You know, if you're in the kind of novel science area like us, where you're trying to build something that's not been done that way before, so they get a kind of safe environment to build their product with money before they go out into the commercial world. With us, we just had an idea. So we, you know, to be honest, we had to beg, borrow and steal from everyone we could to get enough money to put this together. And then we just pushed as hard as we could to show as much traction as we could. And that got us there. I think we're also, you know, we're hitting, in my view, we're hitting the market at the right time. You know, there's a kind of perfect confluence of, you know, payers changing financial models, increased strain on the hospital systems themselves, patients themselves are trying to keep themselves healthy and at home, and the technology itself has got to a point where you can do things like this. And then we came at the exact right moment, and I think that really helped us too.
You're a Scotland-based company. I see you have offices in New York. Is the U.S. market new to you, or, you know, how long have you been in the U.S. market? Where do you see yourself going in this market?
Yeah, so, I mean, pretty much from the start, we decided that the U.S. was the market we wanted to focus on. We've done a lot of clinical studies and a lot of R&D in the United Kingdom, and some of our early customers are here in the U.K. But Stuart, my co-founder, and I were both and are really, really, really ambitious. We think, you know, there's no Facebook-sized company within healthcare. You know, there are the three biggest companies in the world right now are technology companies, all focused on consumer. And the industry that most needs that kind of innovation is actually healthcare. So Stuart and I, from the very beginning, were incredibly ambitious about building a big company in healthcare that can genuinely improve the lives of patients in healthcare delivery. And for us, the place where we could scale fastest and get adoption fastest was the United States. So we, from the very beginning, built this company to focus there. I spend half my time in the United States now. We're growing our office in New York. It just made sense for us to focus our attention there.
So walk me through like a day in the life of a patient, maybe an elderly patient or one of your use cases.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first comment to make is that we've tried to make our product as passive as possible for the patient. So when we got into this space, we looked at all of the existing products that are out there. We looked at all of the existing literature. And in our view, the biggest problem was the patient experience. You know, clearly our customer is the home health agency or the healthcare provider, and our value proposition and our ROI is targeted at them. But the reality is, if the experience is not amazing for the patient, if the patient doesn't want to use it, it is irrelevant what value it, you know, theoretically can provide for the healthcare provider, because they're not going to get anything through it. So we focused on how do we make this as seamless and easy as possible for the patient. So let's say, for example, the patient is a COPD patient or a heart failure patient. They are, let's say it's a chronic care management service. They are high risk, and the provider, the physician, home health agency wants to monitor them for long-term care. So we now can ship directly to the patient's front door a box with all of the kit that they need. We've taken care of the connectivity. So the first thing the patient needs to do is just plug in our little home hub. It just plugs into the mains, and that provides Wi-Fi for the home. So that our device can transmit out, because one of the, in our view, greatest barriers to telemonitoring and telehealth has been absence of home connectivity and home internet. So we took care of that through what is literally just a plug-and-go box. And then the patient slides our device up their arm and really loosely attaches it, and that's it. They're now being monitored from that point. That device has got a roughly 2-day battery life, so every couple of days they switch it over. We give each patient two devices, so they're constantly, you know, they're able to switch between them. And we've done everything we can to make it, you know, that one device monitors pretty much everything that they need. If the provider wants weight, that's a peripheral device. But even in that case, we've made that wireless and seamless. So the patient stands on the weighing scales, the weight comes straight into our platform. There's no manual entry for the patient. Patient doesn't have to phone in a result or get a phone call to give a result. It's just completely seamless and as passive as humanly possible. We then took that a step further. One of the clinical studies that we did in the United States, where we were just looking at patient adherence in a transitional care service, the biggest thing they asked for was to get access to the data themselves. So we released out a tablet application. We put the tablet in the kit that the patient gets when it's delivered to them. And through that tablet, they can do a number of things. So they can report on symptoms if they're not feeling well. You know, they can say, this is how I'm feeling. We send them structured Q&A, you know, if we want to, or the provider wants to ask them specific questions to track progression. They can do video visits or text visits or send photos to their physician or even potentially to a clinical monitoring service through us or through a partner. And we can send them out reminders for things like tracking their weight. And that's really just the start for us. Plus, we're now starting to deliver education through it as well. So educational videos and educational content to help them understand their disease. And what we're trying to do is put that in the context of all this objective information we're getting about them. So if they are, you know, let's say a heart failure patient, you obviously want to start looking at things like blood pressure and weight. You know, it's really interesting if you can show the patient objectively that their weight is coming down and we're tracking that and you're giving them education as to why, but actually showing them the benefit on the app as well so they can see what's really happening with their information. The point being ultimately to empower them. So they get the kit, they wear it. If a problem or warning sign starts to appear, then we send an automated alert to home health agency, physician, whoever, you know, the organization wants it to go to. And the ultimate objective for us is they will then schedule or intervene earlier. So that could be, let's say it's a heart failure patient, let's redirect this patient to a clinic visit rather than have them turn up at the ER. And some customers, they've got dedicated teams who go out and visit the patients. So then maybe we're actually prioritizing the patients that they need to go and visit on any given day. Or the opposite way around, because we are saying that that patient's actually quite well, maybe they don't need to visit that patient just as frequently. Does that mean they can increase the number of patients that they are taking care of? But the ultimate point of this is how can we, with as minimal interaction as possible on the part of the patient, how can we fit this just into their daily life? How can we in real time understand what the status and the risk level is of all of these patients that home health agencies and providers are caring for? And the last point I'll make is just that, you know, there's been a number of big studies done in the remote patient monitoring space that show limited return on investment and limited efficacy. And one of the problems with that is that those studies are incredibly homogeneous, you know, incredibly heterogeneous. You know, they're all different. They're all different products. And the, you know, one study of 1,250 patients, it looked at blood pressure and pulse rate collected once a day in the morning from the patient. And that was the, you know, that is clinically meaningless to do that. You have no idea what's going on with the patient. You know, to use that as a way of saying remote patient monitoring is not effective is completely pointless. What we are giving them is 24/7 high fidelity continuous data with the patient doing nothing. And suddenly you see huge amounts more information. You know, another use case is obstructive sleep apnea. Patients who are post-op, who are, you know, post-surgery, who've been sent home on, let's say, high-dose narcotics. If you don't know they've got obstructive sleep apnea, those narcotics might lead to that patient dying because they, you know, they don't wake up as they normally would. Actually, if they're being continuously monitored by something like us, suddenly we can show either before they're admitted in the first place or once they leave that they're having, you know, significant nocturnal hypoxia, and maybe they shouldn't be on high dose narcotics. Maybe there's a different way we can treat that patient.
You briefly mentioned video visits, but does your product also have a video capture or video live real time video piece?
It does. That's something we've just been building at the moment. And again, for us, this went back to the point about patient experience. We wanted to try and, without replicating loads of other people's functionality, we wanted to try and control as much of the experience as possible to make it as great for the patient as it could, as we could. And one big part of that was video visits. So we built it into our product.
So what about HIPAA? Tell us a little bit about your security.
Yeah. So I mean, obviously, the amount of information we're collecting on patients is of great concern to us and to the patient. And that's, it's not just an issue for us in the United States, but it's an issue in Europe as well, where we now have something called GDPR. So we go to enormous lengths to try and protect that information. Everywhere it's stored is encrypted using the very latest industry encryption. We use a vendor called Amazon Web Services, which is pretty much the largest, they're pretty much the largest data center provider in the world. I think they do it for the CIA and they're about to do it for DOD as well. But the point is, you know, they can do security in the most places way better than anyone else can. So, you know, we'd be as well relying on them. But we then do a lot of work internally on our applications to make sure that every possible surface that some threat could get access to patient information is encrypted and secured. We subject ourselves to routine penetration testing. We hold ISO 27001 certification, which is around information security. We are HIPAA compliant already. And to be honest, we go even beyond the HIPAA certification requirements, because to us, protecting this information is mission critical.
Well, what about EHR integration?
So we already have an available FHIR API. We can do HL7 as well, although our preference is FHIR. The challenge, and I'm sure this isn't news to you, but the right. challenge is not normally companies like us. The challenge is the EMR vendors and making sure that they have publicly available, you know, FHIR specifications, or that they conform to the actual FHIR spec, so that you can integrate. In the home health space, I think the situation's a little bit better. There's a smaller number of vendors. Those vendors themselves are slightly smaller than, say, Epic or Cerner. We've built really good relationships with all the EMR vendors, and I think things have advanced a lot more now than, say, where we were 5 years ago. You know, Epic has a publicly available FHIR API now. So I think it's much easier than it was. Still challenging and depends on the EMR vendor that you're trying to integrate with.
And as far as implementation, it sounds like there's very little to learn from the patient standpoint. So how long would it take to, let's say I were your patient, how long would it take to get me up and running and monitored?
I mean, well, only the time it takes to ship the kit to your front door.
Okay. And then I put it on.
We've designed this to try and make this plug and go. You know, I don't understand why there are 12-month implementation cycles. Maybe if you're integrating with EMR, I can understand that. But, you know, we ship out to your front door, you set it up, this whole thing can be done in minutes. This isn't, we wanted to make this simple. It shouldn't be complex.
Gotcha. And support, how's support available through your company? Should I need it?
So we provide 24/7 support directly to the user. Within all of our applications, we have a little real-time instant chat box, and we provide sub-10-minute response times to that. So if, you know, patient, doctor, nurse, anyone requires support, they message us through that, and we get back straight away. We also have phone and email, but most of our users use our instant chat facility. And to be honest, we've made support one of our major selling points. We do everything we can to make our users love us.
And how's your product with the FDA?
So we're FDA pending just now. We hope to be FDA cleared within the next 2 to 3 months. We'll be the first wearable device that is the same FDA regulation as an ICU monitor in hospital. So we've, you know, effectively taken the ICU monitor and made it a wearable, which, as far as we can see, no one else has done before.
So in wrapping up, Christopher, where's your company, where's Snap40 headed? I mean, you've grown so quickly. What's your vision for the future, your roadmap, or just where do you see the next few years? With your company or healthcare in general, and how you're going to manage with that?
I think with healthcare in general, I think there's going to continue to be an increased focus on preventive medicine, or trying to treat patients at much lower cost opportunities than we do right now. Most cases right now, particularly in the populations in America who need it most, say Medicaid, Medicare, we're essentially waiting until these patients turn up at the ER and they're, you know, fairly acutely and chronically unwell, and then we're treating them, which means it's, you know, 10x the expense it would be if we dealt with them 3 years previously. So I think we're going to keep seeing this shift to let's treat people way earlier in a preventive way. As for where we fit into this, I think, you know, we see a future where everyone is wearing, you know, a little chip in their arm that continuously monitors their health, and that drives that preventive healthcare delivery. So, you know, the second you start to show signs that something's going wrong, you know, that healthcare service comes to you. And, you know, I'd like to see us be at the vanguard of doing that, you know, putting something on every single human being and protecting their health. There are huge technical, ethical, legal, you know, economic ramifications for what we're proposing to do, but I am convinced someone's going to do that over the next 10, 15 years, and I fully intend it's us that does it. In the shorter term, we are focused on getting our product onto as many, many patients as we can and showing the benefits that we can deliver to those patients, to the home health agencies, to the healthcare providers.
Is there anything else you'd like to add before we sign off here? Because this has been great. Thank you.
No, I suppose just, you know, please check out our website at snap40.com, and would love to talk to anyone who's interested in this space. You know, not as a sales pitch, just as a, you know, we're learning, we're discovering, talking about the market, talking about healthcare.
Great. Once again, this is Christopher McCann, CEO and co-founder of Snap 40. Thanks so much, Christopher, for joining us today. And this has been quite informative. Thank you.
Thank you.